Richard Edwards. This is the song. So I have a record out called Lemon Cotton Candy Sunset that you can buy at record stores and on internets. But I have another record that I made around about the same time that I'm going to start promoting now, even though you can't buy it or hear it. But this song is from it, and it maybe it'll come out in the fall. This song is called Howlin' Heart.
Tell me all of the time. Are you lonely? 'Cause maybe I've been lonely too. Do you want it? Best mama, I want. Best mama, I want you.
I suppose now we'll go back to promoting a record that exists and that can be purchased or streamed on the internet. This song is from Lemon Cotton Candy Sunset. It's called Rollin' Rollin' Rollin'.
I don't want to get used to the way your mouth moves, love. I don't want to stop. Tired and I can feel you, but I ain't up to love something's mother. If I ain't up to be something's father, if I don't wanna live in my skin, cut me out, Jesus, make me stronger. Have a little heart. I don't wanna get lost in the wind, rolling down the river, hoping that you're coming home. I don't wanna get stuck in your sun, frightened just a little low. I know your mama relates, and if I get used to you, you know that you have been loathsome too. I don't wanna get lost in the wind, rolling, rolling, rolling. I don't wanna get used to song sounds, 'cause some Texas girl at a funeral has been breaking me down, and I don't want to get used to you, used to you, used to you. Somehow, mama, it feels like I'm used to you, used to you somehow. Well, I don't want to get lost in the wind, rolling down the river, darkness at the edge of my brain. I don't want to get stuck in your sun, fried up on your griddle cage. You hear me begging for rain, and if this is losing you, you know the winds have been blown into. I don't. right up in a little while. You gotta do me again. And if this is losing you, you know that I have been, you know that I have been lonesome. Sometimes I get lost. Rolling, rolling, rolling.
Back to promoting records that aren't out yet. This is another song off of another new record that's maybe come out in a few months. I don't really know how to say things about songs or why they were written or what they're about, but this one is about Gene Tierney having a bad day, I think. She had a lot of bad days, but this was one of them, I guess.
Gene was having a day. There's no other way to say it. Hung high on a sunbeam. Splayed over a river of love. Gene was having a day. There's no other way to explain it, but I knew when I saw you. I knew when you said, I don't mean to complain now. My day's been going so lame, and I don't believe you. Gene was having a day. I don't know what to do. When she's curled up in a fetal position, when she's clawed at her face like a rat. Gene was having a day. I don't know what to do. When she's writhing like a bug in an oven, when she's clawed up the room. She's shot. And I don't mean to complain now. My love's been running away. My love's been running away. I don't mean to complain now. My love's been running away. My love. And I watch the sun. Strange, strange, strange. Ooh.
Okay, so for my final song, I'll continue promoting a record that doesn't exist and do a third song from this other record that hasn't, that'll come out hopefully this year. Kind of a sister record for Lemon Cotton Candy Sunset, which is the album I have that's available.
can't see your eyes. I can't see your eyes. They look strange to me. They look strange.
Thanks.
And now an interview with Richard Edwards with WFYI's Joel Dittmeyer.
How did it feel to perform in the small studio?
It was really fun.
Because I know you haven't done many performances.
I haven't.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, it has been a long time. I went to New York right when the album came out and did a few things sort of like this setting. So I got my feet wet a little bit again. And it is sort of bicycle-y in nature. It's the first one was strange, and then you remember, all right, you know, more or less, as long as your throat's feeling okay and, you know, I don't, goes okay.
Well, it's been a journey and then some for you.
Yeah.
And we've got to talk about it.
Yeah.
So in 2014, I mean, your life really changed completely, didn't it?
When
you finally were figured out what the heck was going on with you.
Yeah, I'd always had kind of a trick gut, but nothing that really dramatically altered my life. It's just an inconvenience, like most people have something. But yeah, I would say a couple years, 2010, 2011, it really noticeably shifted to something, you know, dire and painful and everything else. And yeah, it came to a head in 2014. I had a record out, and you know, we had a tour. The record was doing well, which they don't always. And right before the tour, it just, something snapped, and I just, you know, had a hard time standing up, had a hard time catching my breath, had a hard time just sort of existing with the pain level. And yeah, I went on a tour, and it was a lot of press was canceled, and the whole West Coast tour was canceled. And then I ended up being flown to UCLA by an organization called Music Cares, which is like a wing of the Grammys, and they help with a lot of like addiction and musicians and health, all sorts of health stuff. And they stepped in and kind of like not only helped me see specialists that maybe were out of my price range, but also just were active in telling doctors, don't tell this kid to eat yogurt and send him out of the room. Like, be thorough, because this isn't, you know, it's not a put on. And yeah, I got a call one day that said, you need to get to the pharmacy right now. This is serious. And I went. And yeah, it was like 6 months of various treatments and stuff to be rid of C. diff, which is what I was diagnosed with. But from that point forward, it was still kind of a journey. As you said, after that, unfortunately, it's not one of those things that was cured and then just like, you know, Popeye with a spinach. It was a pretty good 8 months, 9 months, a year, kind of amazing, and then sort of became a little stormy again right before I went to do this record, and that started us off on that fun journey.
Did you have health insurance during this time?
I went years and years without health insurance, but I got sick enough with this stomach stuff that eventually I had to buy insurance just because we toured so much, and it was just impossible to like be out of state and not have it. But it was extremely difficult and expensive, and I can't say that I had wonderful insurance that helped. But there was a sense of like, if I'm going to tour, I can't tour without it, because you know, it's more than liability insurance at this point. I have an active issue that I'm dealing with. And I had to see, you know, I went to a hospital in Asheville, North Carolina when this started. I've been to a few hospitals around the country when something snaps and doesn't feel like it's just the normal event. So yeah, I did. I don't right now, but I did then.
You don't have insurance now?
No, it's one of those things. It's like, I think there's a lot of self-employed people that have fallen in the weird gray areas of the Affordable Care Act, which was amazing and got me set up at the beginning. But there were kind of a lot of plans that went away, and mine was one of those. And I'm in one of those weird businesses where every other year I show income. You know, every other year I have a record out and a tour to the extent that I can tour. And those years it's like, oh, right, there's money, and I don't qualify for things. And the next year I look broke. So, yeah, I'm currently dealing with getting it dealt with. But, yeah.
And Mercy Cares, how did you find out about them?
I had a friend named Tom DeSavia who worked at a publisher I got really, really lucky, and I don't take it for granted. It was a lot of kind of nepotism, and to be frank, I had a friend who was a publisher who just cared about my material and cared about, and subsequently cared about me as a friend, and he just made calls, you know, and I had to go through the process everyone goes through. I had to fill out applications and do all this. It wasn't any sort of wink-wink deal, but it was certainly him going to people that he had a relationship with and saying, this kid's going to die, maybe. Like, he's lost tons of weight. He doesn't look good. And they swooped in at that point, you know. Like I said, had to go through the rigmarole of, like, showing him tax returns and everything else. But, yeah, it kind of came in, like, conquering angel hordes.
Most people die from C. diff.
A lot of them do, yeah. And from what I gathered when I was diagnosed is that it was pretty close to that point in my situation, for sure. Yeah. And it certainly felt like it.
Have you had to have surgery or anything?
Yeah, I had, I was on all sorts of antibiotics, obviously, which is still kind of a medieval treatment for an illness like that, that is sometimes caused by antibiotics. For me, it wasn't, but... And then I actually had a transplant where they take, like, healthy, you know, essentially bacteria out of your, at that time it was my spouse, put you under and infuse it all through your colon. And that's what freed me of it, basically. But yeah, I mean, a year ago when I was finishing the record, I had a flare up that wasn't C. diff. I keep, you know, I continually test negative, but symptomatically it sure felt the same. Lost a bunch of weight. And then at that point I had an actual surgery where they just, like, put me under and just, like, saw it up into my abdomen, up to my chest, and pulled out scar tissue, pulled out, like, a mass that thankfully tested negative for stuff. But yeah, I've had pretty much, like, the gamut of fun.
How did you get it? Did you ever find out?
I don't know. My theory is, I think they're finding more and more that these, like, Prilosec kind of stuff, even generic, is doing it. And I got really sick in 2010, and it wasn't like Dumbo's feather sick, it was really sick, and that was part of a regimen. Like, when you have ulcers or H. pylori or stuff, part of that regimen's like antibiotic with those sort of acid blockers. And I think I just had, honestly, bad doctors who were kind of, like, in bed with drug reps, and they just kind of kept me on some of this stuff. And it wasn't an insane amount of time, but that's as close as I can come to any sort of theory, unless I, you know, happen to come across it in life. Because they say it's wildly contagious, but I had it for so long and lived with, you know, my wife and child and stuff, and thank God everybody was fine, you know, my extended family and everything. But, yeah, I don't know.
Does it make you think differently about health insurance, about politics, about the future,
yeah,
especially since you have a daughter as well?
Well, I think, yeah, the insurance... Absolutely, for her. It's made me think differently about stuff that goes even deeper than the insurance. I mean, the insurance situation right now potentially is horrifying. And I'm one of those people there were problems with, you know, Obamacare. It was a beautiful thing and amazing, but I'm not one of those people that believes you got to be all or nothing. I mean, it absolutely needs some work. But the alternative to that is just a car crash. I mean, so on that side, it maybe goes without saying. But deeper than that, I kind of was thrust into a medical system that I naively thought treated suffering people the way a detective would, you know, like, really gets in there and tries to figure out the cause of the suffering, tries to alleviate it, if not eradicate it. And I just didn't find that often. It was really depressing. I mean, hospital after hospital, doctor after doctor. I would have people laughing outside of waiting rooms, you know, and saying, like, well, this kid's been to wherever, like, what does he expect us to do? You know, and my wife and I'd be sitting in there, like, wanting to strangle somebody. And this happened over and over again until, honestly, Music Cares came in and just kind of got mean and just said, like, you're not going to say this to him anymore. You're going to investigate it. And luckily, they found a great doctor who I don't think you needed to say that to, who's this guy William Kessler at IU, the branch of IU here in Indianapolis. And he was a beautiful dude. I mean, he's like, he put his hand on my shoulder. I've talked about it before, and just kind of said, we're going to work on this, you know? Like, I'm not going to roll my eyes at you. I'm not going to... And he found something that could have killed me, you know, because he cared. And I think it's, like, it's depressing to think about doctors like any other profession. Like, a lot of them, they go and do their job and they leave at the end of the day. And when you find one that doesn't do that, it's great. So I don't know what that taught me or what it means, but I think people being an advocate for themselves is really important, and not going to doctors and just assuming, like, well, you know, they said eat more yogurt, so I guess I should eat more yogurt. I mean, you really have to go in and be kind of a rabid advocate for yourself, or be fortunate enough, as I was, to have advocates for you. And I'm very aware how unique that situation was for me, you know, very, very unique to have a team of people working with someone who doesn't have the means to pay that team of people to advocate on their behalf. So, yeah.
But obviously this affected you on so many other different levels, too. One level, just physically, your insides are changed, your resonance, everything. How does it feel different now when you sing, when you play the guitar, when you perform, as opposed to before?
That's an unfortunate part of this, you know, whether it's this illness or whether it's a byproduct of it. I have really incredible, like, upper GI pain and symptoms, a lot of, like, cramping in one specific spot, so singing can be tough. I kind of gasp to catch breath more because it's just kind of a mass of trouble right up there under my chest bone. So I found weird strategies to sort of make it easier, like kind of chugging tea helps a little bit, chugging Sprite, you know, these things that are kind of counterintuitive, bubbles, you know, that doesn't seem like that would help, but it does, you know, it pops and it loosens it up, and I can say, I mean, this is all kind of mortifying and gross, but, and it just like rumbles, like you're, you know, when you're laying in bed and your stomach's hungry, it rumbles and it feels better for a few hours, and so, yeah, I, like, sustained singing, even sustained talking can be painful for me. And then there's periods that go by where it seems much calmer and it's fine. But it, for whatever reason, it's always kind of like building up to a rotten few days, and then it's simmering down, and then it's building up again to a rotten few days, and then it's simmering down. So, yeah, I mean.
As an artist and personally, how has that affected you? When you were with Margo, I mean, you guys were, it was loud, it was forceful, it was really into it, and just from hearing you this afternoon, I mean, you've had to physically change your presentation.
Is to some degree. Yes and no. Some of that's just a product of playing with an acoustic guitar as opposed to loud instruments. I mean, I can still belt out stuff. It's more the sustained act of doing it that's a problem, not the act itself. But one thing that changed for the better, while a lot of times I'm talking about how much of a bummer stuff is, because I had so much pain when I got home from that tour, I was writing songs where I wasn't belting out at the top of my, like, head voice. I was doing a lot of, like, sort of falsetto, but, like, I don't know. It's somewhere between falsetto and head voice that I do. And I spent 2 years really kind of developing that by accident because it was painful to do the other thing. And strangely enough, that's, like, sort of become what I do, and it's like my whole record is that, my next record's that, everything I write is that. There was other reasons that, you know, I also would sing along to like Linda Ronstadt and Dolly Parton records and try to sing in that range, so there's other, it wasn't just some magical illness, you know, but that's a positive. You know, there was some change that happened that was not catastrophic.
And how did you do that? Because, I mean, your marriage fell apart through all this. You've got this possible, you may die at any moment.
Yeah, right.
And
it's hilarious.
Your old band
like
broke up. You guys were right at the pinnacle and boom.
Yeah, well.
But yet.
I think I'll stick around forever for revenge.
What do you mean?
I'm partially joking, but I have I'm a brat. You know, I think in good and bad ways. And there's a certain point where, like, if I feel like somebody's spited me, I'm not going to, like, slash their tires. I'm going to make a good record, you know, or write a better song than I wrote before. Or I've always been that way. It's just like when I played basketball, I was that way. I'm motivated by what, you know, however an athlete's motivated in that way. There's probably athletes that are just motivated because they love the sport. And there's athletes that are like, they remember everything any, like, journalist said about them. And they're thinking about that. I don't get that way with journalists. Or reviews, but I do get that way about personal stuff in my life. I'm like a score settler, but I try to settle scores positively. Like, I should work harder. I should write better. I should make better. And that kind of, I mean, really, it was a life and death for me. It was like, I got to finish the record. I got to make it good. You know, like, just be worthy of it, I guess.
Is it revenge at the disease, at the marriage,
yeah,
at the band?
Not the band. I like the band are fine. 2 out of 3. Yeah. the disease, I got more work to do to get back at the disease, probably. But, yeah. Well, they didn't die, though, so that's good.
Well, it's very good. how long will that last? Will you just always, do you think you'll just always have this kind of revenge thing? Or do you see that settling at some point? And
I'll always have some score to settle, but it might be more internal. It's not always external. It's very much internal. I feel crazy and unhappy when I'm in these periods after a record where, if you're writing at all, it's all kind of like a white bread version of the thing you just did. And it's not on purpose, but it takes maybe 6 months or even a year for me to find a song or two that feel like a different thing or that inspire me enough to say, this might be what I want to do next. And I'm seeing tiny rays of that light cracking through the wall right now. But I'm still kind of in that phase where 90% of what comes out of me is just a slightly worse version of this record. So this is all a long way of saying that I feel that sort of spite motivation more internally to be like, stop writing, you know, bad versions of what you just did. Have some sort of breakthrough thematically or melodically or chord progression wise and get on to work, because that's my I take it real seriously. I don't look at it like a hippie or anything. I mean, I work at it really hard. So I think I'll always have that, but it probably won't be directed towards, it's rarely directed towards other people.
So do you start songs, get them to a spot, and then put them away for a side and go on to something else? Or
I used to do that more. I used to be more just like kind of whatever came out on instinct was good, and maybe I relied on a baseline level of talent that I'm not in any way trying to over exaggerate, you know, just basic halfway talent. And as I get older, I beat around with them a lot more than I did. I don't really put them away that much. I kind of revise over much longer periods of time. And I think they morph a lot more now than they did when I was younger. But I think that's probably pretty common to most creative people as they get, I mean, maybe you're in the beginning, it is like athletics or something, you're relying on physical gifts that you don't have to read into too much. And as you get older, you start to see the court, you know, differently, I guess, and process information rather than just act and react. So I don't, this is all kind of hippy-dippy, but.
Do you like doing the solo thing, or do you ever think about doing a band again?
Well, I mean, the record obviously has a band that I loved, and we'd like to do some shows with that band. I love doing, I mean, I miss touring all the time. I love playing in a band. This is the longest period of just me and a guitar that I've pretty much ever done. Yeah, I'd love to. It's all just a matter of my stormy gut. But I'm going to go to Los Angeles in July and do a few shows. And I think some of those guys might play a little bit on those shows. And so maybe gradually start doing that. And then in the fall, there's hopefully this other, we made two records at the same time. And so hopefully there'll be this other thing. And my hope is always that in 6 months, I'm always hoping in 6 months I'll be a little stronger and healthier and we can go maybe do more band shows as opposed to this period, which has been for sure like quiet solo stuff.
Is the next record very similar to this one, or is it different?
Yeah, it's the same band, and it's the same producer and studio. It's less, this record obviously is very divorcey and very themed and stuff. That one's a little bit more, there's some of that stuff on it, but there's also stuff that's not like that at all. It just thematically is more like writing in character, you know, or stuff like that. But sonically, it's pretty similar. Maybe it's more up, like, energetic or upbeat at times in the melody department. Yeah, but pretty similar.
And with your daughter, is she going to follow in your footsteps?
I sure hope not. She's just now started. She's always loved music, and she has her own taste, and that's evolved through the course of her life, or devolved, considering she kind of like came out of the womb listening to T-Rex and the Beatles. She's just now started to be interested in guitar in a way where I can tell her attention span is up for it, you know? So that's been fun, but that's just been the past month, so I'm still waiting to see, you know, how that works. But I do know a couple weeks ago was the first time that she picked up a guitar and didn't put it right down, like studied it for a little while. I, you know, show her a few chords, and she spent time with them on her own instead of like, oh, that was great, let's go outside and throw a ball or whatever. So,
because she sings a little bit on this album, doesn't she?
Yeah, she howls on this record. She did something on the next one too, I think. she really likes doing it. She's kind of a performer. She really likes like film stuff, video stuff too. She's done that stuff with me, and she's writing her own little film now that she wants to. That's like her summer project. Is we're gonna get people together and shoot some little 5-minute and try to make it look like an actual movie. So she's really creative. I'm hoping that the work ethic has to follow, or else it's meaningless. And now, I don't know how any kid has the attention span for it now with so much stuff in front of their, you know, not to sound like I'm 60, but if I had had all these screens and things, I don't think I would have played guitar. Maybe I would have got more into video because you can look at the screen and edit it.
Do you feel more influenced and inspired when you're out on the West Coast or when you're here back in the Midwest?
I think the West Coast, but I love Indianapolis, and I think it's a city that's become something so different than what it was when I was younger, and I was real kind of emo about not, you know, wanting to be in New York. But I was that kid who was dreaming always about going to New York and doing these. I romanticize that stuff, and I don't romanticize it in that same way, but I'd be lying if I said that LA was just such a big part of my healing process from divorce and from illness. And I associate it really, really closely with that. And when I set foot there, it transports me to a place of comfort and a place of peace in a way that nowhere else does, you know. And I love it here, and my daughter has a good situation, but there's complications. Like anybody's home, it's your home, and there's messiness of people and situations, and it's a little bit more dreamlike out there. And if I lived there, it would have its own messiness that would develop, but it's hard to top those sunsets out there, yeah.
Thank you very much for spending time with us today.
Of course, thank you.